Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, who do you believe? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Let's take it in the order that the Senate did. First, Christine Ford, and then Brett Kavanaugh. Christine Ford, again, testified first before the committee yesterday. You heard it probably on these airwaves starting just after 9 o'clock. And she
What'd you think of her hairdo? Let's start with the, you know, aesthetics. She had a new hairdo, highlights, different look than we're used to seeing in her Facebook picture on top of the mountain with the sunglasses.
If you say so. I'm more interested in what
she had to
say. Well,
all the women, of course, that were in the room all said, oh, look at her. It's called the lob. It's the long bob.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what she got. It's really hip and cool right now with the kids and the moms, just so you know.
Okay. All right.
They've been trying to talk me into the lob for years, all right?
How about the sing-songy Valley Girl voice? Is that big with the moms, too? Here's Christine Ford saying it's her civic duty.
I am terrified. I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school.
And she started by explaining how they got connected in the first place, her and Kavanaugh.
We did not know each other well, but I knew him and he knew me. In the summer of 1982, like most summers, I spent most every day at the Columbia Country Club in Chevy Chase, Maryland, swimming and practicing diving. One evening that summer, after a day of diving at the club, I attended a small gathering at a house in the Bethesda area. There were four boys I remember specifically being at the house: Brett Kavanaugh, Mark Judge, a boy named PJ, and one other boy whose name I cannot recall. I also remember my friend Leland attending. I do not remember all of the details of how that gathering came together, but like many that summer, it was almost surely a spur-of-the-moment gathering.
At one point in time, she reminded me of those two dudes in front of the LA City Council, you know, who are like, hey, man, you know, it's just because that's how they, that's their cadence and
yes,
how they speak over there on the West Coast.
Well,
I'm sorry, let's go back to the facts.
Well, but it's just about the who attended the party, you know, that's changed a few times.
A big deal.
Yeah, the Ford's therapist notes say four boys were involved. That's Ford says this is a discrepancy that was an error on the therapist's part. Ford said there were four boys at the party, but only two in the room. But then her polygraph contradicts that statement. In the polygraph, she said there were four boys and a couple of girls at the party. During her testimony yesterday,
yeah, we learned that there was just one girl, her friend Leland.
To clarify that more than four people may have been present at the party in question and that an individual named PJ was not a bystander to her alleged attack, and she does not allege that he knew about it. That was her WhatsApp conversation with Washington Post reporter. So, I mean, just in terms of, and again, I'm going to give her a wide berth. I understand the point that was made, really drilled into people's head, that assault victim has trauma, may not remember everything, may remember bits and pieces. Okay, fine. But I'm saying she's remembering the same thing differently. It's not like in the other thing she doesn't remember, like how she got to the party and how she got home, that she's changed her story. She hasn't changed her story. She just doesn't remember that.
And for me, another piece that sticks out besides, you know, that we've already gone over, that she doesn't remember where she was, whose house it was, the date of the alleged attack. But she didn't tell. She went to that party with a girlfriend, Leland, and she said that she has no idea what happened. Now, if I went to a party and I was 15 years old with one girl, with one friend,
yeah,
hypothetically speaking, and she ran out of the house and left, I would be all over, like, hey, where's Christina? Where's Chrissy? And well, the next day or that night, I would go to Chrissy's house on my bike or walk there and say, hey, why'd you leave the party? What happened? That conversation never happened.
Or conversely, let me ask you this, because this was brought up by some women as well. I think Molly Hemingway, among others. If you had just been the victim of an assault and you were there with a friend, would you leave your friend behind knowing you have two people there that allegedly were part of assaulting you?
God, no. I mean, that's why it was so weird, because there's this girl code that we have. We would never, ever in a million years leave her there or leave and not find out why your friend ran out of the house. I'd be all over that.
You don't have to tell me about the girl code. I know all about the
girl
code.
You know all about the
girl
code.
Yeah, right. Here's for now describing the assault, and we're going to give her, you know, the full compliment. If you didn't hear it, it takes a couple of minutes to unwind, but it's important to hear it in complete context to make an assessment. And it, you know, she gets emotional, understandably.
When I got to the small gathering, people were drinking beer in a small living room, family room type area on the first floor of the house. I drank one beer. Brett and Mark were visibly drunk. Early in the evening, I went up a very narrow set of stairs leading from the living room to a second floor to use the restroom. When I got to the top of the stairs, I was pushed from behind into a bedroom across from the bathroom. I couldn't see who pushed me. Brett and Mark came into the bedroom and locked the door behind them. There was music playing in the bedroom. It was turned up louder by either Brett or Mark once we were in the room. I was pushed onto the bed, and Brett got on top of me. He began running his hands over my body and grinding into me. I yelled, hoping that someone downstairs might hear me, and I tried to get away from him, but his weight was heavy. Brett groped me and tried to take off my clothes. He had a hard time because he was very inebriated and because I was wearing a one-piece bathing suit underneath my clothing. I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life. It was hard for me to breathe, and I thought that Brett was accidentally going to kill me. Both Brett and Mark were drunkenly laughing during the attack. They seemed to be having a very good time. Mark seemed ambivalent, at times urging Brett on, and at times telling him to stop. A couple of times I made eye contact with Mark and thought he might try to help me, but he did not. During this assault, Mark came over and jumped on the bed twice while Brett was on top of me. And the last time that he did this, we toppled over and Brett was no longer on top of me. I was able to get up and run out of the room. Directly across from the bedroom was a small bathroom. I ran inside the bathroom and locked the door. I waited until I heard Brett and Mark leave the bedroom, laughing, and loudly walk down the narrow stairway, pinballing off the walls on the way down. I waited, and when I did not hear them come back up the stairs, I left the bathroom, went down the same stairwell, through the living room, and left the house.
So Nicole Wallace in the Washington Examiner makes an interesting point about this. It's okay, you don't remember every detail. She remembers the details she does remember all tend to implicate Kavanaugh and
Mark Judge.
Mark Judge. Mm-hmm. The details she doesn't remember could potentially help us zero in on the particulars of when this and where this event, this incident allegedly occurred, and either corroborate or undermine her story. So, you know, again, I'm not saying that you can't, you remember every detail, assault victims, the research on trauma, I understand. But it is worth noting that everything she does remember with specificity implicates them and all the things that she doesn't remember could corroborate or undermine her story.
Right. And one part that stuck out, you know, she talked about what you know, everyone asked her what stays with you.
The laughter, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense.
You've never forgotten that laughter. You've never forgotten them laughing at you.
They were laughing with each other.
And you were the object of the laughter?
I was, you know, underneath one of them while the two laughed. Two friends having a really good time with one another.
And after seeing that, I mean, I cried during her testimony, and I bawled during Kavanaugh's testimony.
So let me ask you this question, put this out. Do you take the position that Kavanaugh and other Republicans have taken to? I believe something happened to Ms. Ford, but, you know, it wasn't Brett Kavanaugh, essentially. Obviously, that's Kavanaugh's position. That seems to be the position of most, if not all, of the Republican senators. I do believe something happened to her, though. Do you stipulate to that, as Kavanaugh suggested, as possible? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Chris in Woodstock, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. I've watched the whole thing, pretty much, and I thought that her attempted to cry was completely fake. It was forced. Watch her again. She's wearing glasses. You can't really make out any tears in her eyes. I think this whole thing was staged from the get-go. This is absolutely 100% political.
That we have a little compassion here. I mean, please.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
That was not staged. That was not a Democratic plan. I went in with an open mind, but I was kind of biased toward her. And then when I listened to her, I thought, oh, gosh, Kavanaugh's done. It's over. But then Kavanaugh came. But we'll get into that later. But I thought she was believable.
And just in terms of being a political operative, she addressed that straight away.
Apart from the assault itself, these past couple of weeks have been the hardest of my life. I've had to relive this trauma in front of the world. And I've seen my life picked apart by people on television, on Twitter, so other social media, other media, and in this body who have never met me or spoken with me. I have been accused of acting out of partisan political motives. Those who say that do not know me. I am an independent person, and I am no one's pawn.
Tony in Downers Grove.
Yeah, well, you know what? I was waiting for her to say, and one day while I was at the band camp, I believe something happened to her, but I think she's psychologically ill, seriously ill. Okay. And she had a long time to put the story together. Well, she read the script very well. And I hope you get to Dick Durbin, because he is such a piece of garbage.
Yes.
Well, he just asked her, with what degree of certainty, are you sure that it was Brett Kavanaugh who assaulted you? And she said 100% certainty.
Dick Durbin also said something important. He said, a polished liar can tell a seamless story, and take it from someone who knows.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy talking about Christine Ford's credibility. Quickly, Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I watched the whole thing, and I agree with Amy. It was a terrible story that this lady recited. But you know what? I couldn't help but think that she was so prepped, and so her handlers were absolutely outstanding prepping her for this. And I think the Republican questioner, that lady, did a terrible job. She never established, how does she know Kavanaugh? When did they meet? Why is she 100% sure? He's saying he don't know her at all. And that, you know, just where did you meet him? How long have you talked to him? Did you ever go out with him? Things like that. That's still a question. I don't know. Maybe you guys got the answer. I'll hang up and listen. But thanks. And thanks, Amy, for blowing this in the beginning with a hairdo story. Get a break. Bye.
Well, now thanks. You know what a lob is, okay?
Yeah, Ed, you're a better person for it.
The bi-level lob.
With respect to Rachel Mitchell, Ed, you raise an excellent point, and the questions you asked are a good example of that excellent point you raised.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Don't miss David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We were talking about Christine Ford's testimony yesterday. Let's just kind of take it in sequence here. Christine Ford, then we'll get to Kavanaugh and all of the fireworks during his opening statement, as well as during his exchanges with members of the Democrat caucus on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
And we can't forget Lindsey Graham.
Right. Yeah, well, that's an example. Yeah. Back to Ford, though, because I want to tackle the issue of Rachel Mitchell. It was a big decision for the Republicans to decide to outsource all of their questioning of Ms. Ford to this sex crimes prosecutor from Maricopa County, Arizona, Rachel Mitchell. And the question is, did that end up being a good decision for Republicans? How did you think Rachel Mitchell did? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Well, her hands were kind of tied in a way because she had 5 minutes, and then they went to a Democratic senator on the Judiciary Committee. Then they went back to her. So I felt like there was no flow, like she never really had control of the situation. You know what I'm saying? Like she would start with a line of questioning, and then they'd have to stop, and they'd have to cede their time to a Democratic senator, then come back, and it was just very discombobulated.
Well,
I don't know if she was effective.
Well, that's the point. I don't think she was particularly effective. And yes, I mean, you have to take these 5 minute breaks in your questioning to listen to Democrat senators,
like Cory Booker.
To listen to
Cory needs help. Oof.
To listen to them sanctify Christine Ford as one of America's greatest women
that this planet has ever seen.
Well, right.
Her courage and bravery. It's not as if we've never had another sexual assault victim come forward.
Courage, hero was used by Cory Booker. So it wasn't so much questioning as it was supplicating themselves before Christine Ford and elevating her to Rushmore just about before it was all said and done. I mean, frankly, at some point, I was waiting for one of the Senate Democrats, perhaps the one that wandered away from Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, Blumenthal, to suggest that she replace Harriet Tubman replacing Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. Uh-huh. I was waiting. That's where it was going.
It was courageous for her to come forward, but this every time they had the floor, revisiting that was too much for me.
So Mitchell, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Melissa McCarthy.
She's interrupted by, these hagiographic speeches by Democrat senators, but that doesn't excuse the fact that she sort of didn't have a point in terms of connecting one set of questions to the next set of questions, to establish a theory about Christine Ford and about what she alleges happened.
Right.
It all seemed to sort of be going nowhere. And so I thought perhaps it was effective in preventing any Republicans on that committee from coming
looking
across
like
as bullying her and
people,
all the things that the D.C. press corps would say. So it just eliminated the possibility of those stories. But I also don't think that Rachel Mitchell proved up to be a particularly good inquisitor.
Well, do you think she did her homework? Because I was wondering, I don't know.
She did her homework. She was asking sort of idiosyncratic questions that weren't connected to one another. She led Ford down a path on some issues where she sort of established at least curiosities about things Ford was saying, like, for example, her alleged fear of flying.
Yeah, that stuck out to me because remember she didn't want to go to D.C. because she wanted to take a car because she's afraid to fly. Oh, really? You were just in D.C. last month.
May I ask, Dr. Ford, how did you get to Washington?
In a airplane.
Okay. I ask that because it's been reported by the press that you would not submit to an interview with the committee because of your fear of flying. Is that true?
Well, I was hoping that they would come to me, but then realized that was an unrealistic request.
It would have been a quicker trip for me.
Yes. So that was certainly what I was hoping, was to avoid having to get on an airplane, but I eventually was able to get up the gumption with the help of some friends and get on the plane.
Get up the gumption to fly. She then went on to talk about how she flies everywhere around the world for vacations, to Tahiti, to the Hawaiian Islands, for work. I mean,
it was so weird. But then she said, well, it's different when I'm flying for work than when I'm flying for vacation.
She flies home to Delaware to visit her family every year. And
she was just in D.C. last month. That was so weird. It was just that's why I was saying that was a stall tactic. That was, to me, the I gotcha moment.
Well, the other part of that, and Grassley intervened after that exchange, is to say, we offered to come out to California.
Yes.
And so the fact she is either pretending her attorneys didn't apprise her of that option, they didn't apprise her of that option, or she's sort of soft pedaling it, because, you know, part of this heroinism that she got up the gumption to fly from California to D.C. for this. It was offered in private. I mean, we know this has been established. It was offered in public. It was offered in private. It was offered in California. It was offered in D.C. That was not disputed by Democrats. But otherwise, Rachel Mitchell just established things. She established some important things. That was one. She established that she wanted, Ms. Ford wanted her letter kept confidential, so somebody leaked it and it wasn't her.
Right.
She established that Dianne Feinstein's office recommended one of her attorney's cats to her. And so she established that Dianne Feinstein and her office was consulting with Ford throughout this process, even as the Senate Republicans, along with Democrats, were meeting and discussing this and interviewing witnesses. And they could have asked Kavanaugh about this as well through the entirety of about 30 days or a little bit more. And they never did. And so that became one of the sticking points for Republicans when they had the chance to ask questions of Kavanaugh and also excoriate their Democrat colleagues. And it was interesting, too, that I think in part because of Rachel Mitchell's performance, there was no more Rachel Mitchell when it came to Kavanaugh's time.
Right.
So I just and here's look, don't take my opinion on it. Well, yes, take my opinion.
Yes.
But also Alan Dershowitz.
Ooh, what did he say?
Alan Dershowitz on Rachel Mitchell.
She was totally and completely incompetent in terms of asking cross-examination questions because she has little experience. For example, the main issue now is whether or not she recognized Kavanaugh correctly. She was never asked whether, how well she knew him, how many times she encountered him before this, how close was their relationship. There was nothing that could raise questions about whether, even if she believes she's telling the truth, she may have misidentified. So she just did a terrible job. And I think the Republicans realized that, and they canned her right in the middle. But it was a very bad choice.
Well, and you could go the way she was going by establishing some things that, you know, raised doubts about Ford's credibility, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe that she's being used as a political cudgel, even unbeknownst to her, perhaps, by Democrats. Okay, but you could also ask those questions that Ed and Oakbrook and Alan Dershowitz, never hear those two names in a sentence again, have both suggested, which is, what about the story itself? What about probing the story itself? And Mitchell didn't do that.
No, she fell flat on that.
Tony on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I consider myself a forensic listener, even though my wife will tell you otherwise.
Yeah.
However, I picked up on something she said when the good Senator Leahy was asking her about what she remembers the most. Mm-hmm. And she quotes, and this is off her testimony, he says, "And were you the object of their laughter?" She says, "I was, underneath one of them."
Right.
So right there, it's like, again, I'm not saying this lady wasn't insulted. I'm going in the camp of that she had a traumatic experience. I get all that. However, how can she, maybe she doesn't know, I don't think she's sure it was Kavanaugh, like you said.
Right, but sometimes if you lie to yourself enough, you believe your own lie. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's so true.
Or if you have Democratic senators lying to you like they always do and putting this in your head. I mean, up until what? A few months ago? Not even a month ago. She didn't even use Kavanaugh's name until she was bred by those evil Democrats, and they drilled this in her head, and it was like the playbook. So I feel bad for the woman, but you know what? Brent didn't do this. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Tony. And by the way, the issue or the question of when did she name Brett Kavanaugh, was it not till July? That's also somewhat in dispute because her husband tells a different story. Her husband says his name was mentioned in therapy sessions.
Yeah, in 2012 when she wanted that second door on her house. And by the way, what I learned yesterday, why she wanted that second door, she suffers from panic attacks and she's claustrophobic.
Yeah.
So she didn't say she wanted the second door because of this attack. She said that that's why she wanted a second door and that she had mentioned his name then.
Mike in Union, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think it was a smart move by the Republicans. This was all about optics. With everybody watching, I mean, if they went against her aggressively, it would look like, oh, they assaulted her again, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I think it was a smart move by them to do this. Like I said, everybody's watching. So why would you beat up a woman who probably was maybe offended in the past, but smart move by them, I believe.
All right,
maybe
thanks for the call, Mike.
Part of their game plan to not bring up and ask information like where you met him. Did he ever ask you out on a date? Maybe that was...
If it was, then that doesn't make any sense to me. But it's not beating up on a woman to ask legitimate questions, legitimate fact-based questions, trying to ascertain what she remembers and compare that to what she's previously said she remembers. There's nothing beating up about that. I agree with what Mike said about optics, so I understand why they did it. But that doesn't mean you couldn't get a better cross-examiner, a female attorney, who's a better cross-examiner. I think Dershowitz makes a good point. She's a prosecutor. How many times is she cross-examining someone accused of a sexual crime? How many times do alleged rapists or child molesters take the stand in their own defense? How many times do you even get that far in a criminal trial? I don't know what her record is, but Dershowitz may be onto something there. A more seasoned criminal defense attorney used to cross-examining to try and impeach witnesses, female, and I'm sure there are many accomplished female criminal defense attorneys and criminal attorneys out there with a lot of trial experience. Maybe it was a good idea. Poorly executed is all I'm saying with Rachel Mitchell, because I just didn't find her questioning going anywhere important, even though we got some value from it. Al in Schererville.
Hello, Dan and Amy. Thank you. Both testimonies were compelling, but here's my question. When you played the testimony of the lady, she indicates that when Kavanaugh came in the bedroom, he locked the door.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if there was lights on in that bedroom or not, but then afterwards she said when they were on the floor, she got up and she ran out of the room. If she suffers from panic attacks, been in a place she's never been before, how in the heck would you figure out how to quickly unlock a door you've never seen before and get away? Just seems odd to me, that's all.
All right, thanks for the call. I mean, that could have been a follow-up question. Now, you said the door was locked, you were able to unlock it, and, you know, just, again, to try and... gather specifics that she does remember versus what she doesn't.
Whose house was she in, and why didn't she leave with her girlfriend?
Well, those were questions.
Or take her girlfriend out of there or tell her girlfriend what had happened.
Well, those would be fair questions as well. They weren't asked.
It's just not, it goes against the grain.
Bill on the Northwest Side.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Good morning. If you brainstormed a list of traumatic events that a 15-year-old teenager might be involved in. You could say sexual assault. You could say got robbed at gunpoint. You could say fell down a flight of stairs. You could say got sucker punched at a bar. You could say was with someone who overdosed and died on drugs.
Okay.
In my opinion, there is no chance you would not remember where you were. Anybody, wow. Not just her. There's no chance. Also, for what it's worth, who wears a wet swimsuit under their clothing? Because
well,
she said she was diving earlier that day.
Right.
No, I did that all the time. That is
okay,
not,
okay. I'll take that one back then. I'll take that one back.
I was a pool rat, too. You can do it all.
Thanks for the call, Bill. I'm wearing one now.
I thought I smelled chlorine.
Yeah. Chris in Aurora.
All right. I think we need to look at the bigger picture here. Yesterday, we witnessed nothing less than the worst day of our government ever. And when Lindsey Graham said what he said, I believe those words we're going to look back on and realize if this goes not the way that we want it to go, then that moment and those words that he said might as well be the beginning of the second Civil War. Because definitively yesterday, the left crossed a red line. It was the contrast could not have been any more clear between the questioning that they asked her and the questions that they asked him. They badgered him over and over, almost trying to make him out to be some belligerent drunk. And then when it came to her, they softballed her over and over, and we got to listen to her in her 12-year-old voice. And when you pull the camera back and you look at what was at stake here, we're going to see this was all about power. It is a sham. It is a con job. And the American people need to see this for what it is, plain and simple.
All right. Thanks for the call, Chris. At 6:06, we'll take up Brett Kavanaugh's opening statement and his exchanges with senators. And take your calls, 312-642-5600, Trunky.pro answer line. Do you believe what the left wants you to believe, that Brett Kavanaugh is Patrick Bateman?
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Should Brett Kavanaugh, rather than just accede to Senate Democrats' demand that he join the call for an FBI investigation, should he do the honorable thing and demand that President Trump replace him as the Supreme Court nominee with Christine Blasey Ford? You don't have to be a lawyer to be on the Supreme Court.
I understand that, but yeah, no, that's crazy talk.
Well, isn't that where we're at? We talked in the 5 o'clock hour about Ms. Ford's testimony.
Now we're ceding our time to Brett Kavanaugh.
All right, as well as Rachel Mitchell's cross-examination skills. Kavanaugh's statement. Here's something I want. We were talking about it off air, but I want to bring this in because I saw a lot of social media traffic on this too.
Well, of course.
Christine Blasey Ford, her testimony. It's over for Brett Kavanaugh. Don't even show up. Let's talk about who Trump is going to replace him with. It's over. Is that what you thought? And if you did think that after listening to her, what did you think after listening to his 45-minute opening statement, Brett Kavanaugh, on what this process has done? One of the several moments during his opening statement where he got really emotional.
One of those women friends from college, my family and my name have been totally and permanently destroyed by vicious and false additional accusations. The 10-day delay has been harmful to me and my family, to the Supreme Court, and to the country. When this allegation first arose, I welcomed any kind of investigation, Senate, FBI, or otherwise. The committee now has conducted a thorough investigation, and I've cooperated fully. I know that any kind of investigation, Senate, FBI, Montgomery County Police, whatever, will clear me. Listen to the people I know. Listen to the people who have known me my whole life. Listen to the people I've grown up with and worked with and played with and coached with and dated and taught and gone to games with and had beers with. And listen to the witnesses who allegedly were at this event 36 years ago. Listen to Ms. Kaiser. She does not know me. I was not at the party described by Dr. Ford. When I accepted the president's nomination, Ashley and I knew this process would be challenging. We never expected that it would devolve into this. Explaining this to our daughters has been about the worst experience of our lives. Ashley has been a rock. I thank God every day for Ashley. I love teaching law, But thanks to what some of you on this side of the committee have unleashed, I may never be able to teach again. For the past 7 years, I've coached my two daughters' basketball teams. You saw many of those girls when they came to my hearing for a couple of hours. You have a letter from the parents of the girls I coached that described my dedication, commitment, and character. I coach because I know that a girl's confidence on the basketball court translates into confidence in other aspects of life. I love coaching more than anything I've ever done in my whole life. But thanks to what some of you on this side of the committee have unleashed, I may never be able to coach again. This confirmation process has become a national disgrace. The Constitution gives the Senate an important role in the confirmation process, but you have replaced advice and consent with search and destroy.
Yeah.
What did you think about his choice? And I don't think it was, I mean, I think it just flowed from him and flowed from when he prepared that statement, as he said, by himself on Wednesday evening. What did you think about his disgust, his choice? Sort of they pushed him past his breaking point, and he was going to heap scorn on them and the process. And it was no more Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah,
no
that
more
we saw
Opie
on
Taylor.
Fox. Yeah, on Fox, he was reserved. He came out Clarence Thomas on steroids. He was angry. He was emotional. And he was rightly critical of the Democrats. And one thing that he said stands out in my mind about how crazy and insane and how we are living in the Twilight Zone his world has become.
Crazy stuff. Gangs, illegitimate children, fights on boats in Rhode Island. All nonsense, reported breathlessly and often uncritically by the media. This has destroyed my family and my good name.
That was, to me, it was that he shoved it in their faces with that, because they brought up all that, you know, what about accuser number 3 and 4? And no, okay, this is all bull jive.
And here's what I think he was doing too, maybe even unintentionally, because I think he needed to get this out, and I'm glad he did. He wasn't shaming Democrat senators, because it's not possible to shame them.
They were shocked.
They're shameless. It is not possible to shame the Cory Bookers and the Kamala Harrises and the Sheldon Whitehouses of this world. Not possible. What he was doing, with help from Lindsey Graham, ultimately, is shaming Republicans. Do not even think about folding in with these people. And I'll tell you what, yesterday and this whole saga, if this isn't a wake-up call to the Republican establishment in this country, in Illinois and everywhere else, including inside the Beltway, and by the way, Brett Kavanaugh's a part of it, and he's gotten the wake-up call of his life. Do you understand what you're up against now? Do you get it? When you watch Kamala Harris and Mazie Hirono and Cory Booker and Sheldon Whitehouse and Dick Blumenthal and Dick Durbin, do you get it? So do you want to continue to be swayed by the siren song of bipartisanship, which they don't believe for a minute? They use it as just what I said, a siren song to suck you in and have Republicans do the bidding of Democrats like we've been doing in this godforsaken state called Illinois for the past 50 years. Do you get what they're willing to do, the depths to which they are willing to sink? Brett Kavanaugh didn't before this process. He did, and I mean the last week. He didn't get it even during the first 30 hours of his testimony before the committees, the Senate Judiciary Committee. Didn't get it. He didn't get it until they, as he said, destroyed his family. And you don't think they'll come after you or anybody else if you're in their way, even at the local level? It doesn't have to be an international spectacle on television that's riveting the entire nation. It can be in your hamlet. It can be anywhere. Do you understand now what you are up against with the left? 312.
I will not be intimidated into withdrawing from this process. You've tried hard. You've given it your all. No one can question your effort. but your coordinated and well-funded effort to destroy my good name and destroy my family will not drive me out. The vile threats of violence against my family will not drive me out. You may defeat me in the final vote, but you'll never get me to quit.
Brett Kavanaugh gets it now. Mm-hmm. Now. But for the first 53 years of his life inside the Beltway, where he's respected and the women of the left that have said nice things about him, and Lisa Blatt, the leftist attorney who wants every Supreme Court justice to be Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who introduced them, it's all well and good. But that's not representative of what the center of gravity is on the left. And Brett Kavanaugh, and we all, not all of us, but Brett Kavanaugh had to learn the hard way at a terrible price, terrible cost. What have you learned? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. It is particularly poignant in Illinois. Mm-hmm. A state run by surrender Republicans, Vichy Republicans, who spend the entirety of their political existence trying to get approval from the institutions of the left, the actual leadership of the Democrat Party in this state, in addition to the Chicago Press Corps and all the other leftists who control the cultural institutions in Chicago like they do in most urban centers, like they do nationally. Do you get it? Watching a man and his family be destroyed because of a series of allegations that have one thing in common, a complete absence of corroboration. Frank in St. Charles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I always vote Republican, but I can understand his anger, but his demeanor, his uncooperative, belligerent, almost like he was drunk or like hung over from the night before, and he did not impress me at all. He seemed like, and on top of that, I think he's lying about the whole thing. He's just upset that this all came out.
Uh-huh. And you based that on what? Just his demeanor yesterday?
Well, that's all we can base anything on.
No, actually not. No. No, that's actually not true. Thanks for the call, Frank. That's actually not true.
He needed to stick up for himself.
We also have how many times does he have to say it, Frank? The four people she identified as being at the party in question have not corroborated her story. They've refuted it. The Miss Kaiser, Leland Kaiser, says, well, she's my friend. I believe her, but I've never met Brett Kavanaugh to the best of my knowledge. So she believes her because it's my friend, so I'm going to vouch for my friend.
But she never met him.
So,
and that's the problem. She was supposed to be at that party.
Correct.
With him.
So actually, we do have a little bit more. We do have 87 women who had a press conference a week ago who've known Brett Kavanaugh for, you know, various numbers of decades and in various settings as a coach, in professional settings, the Bush White House, as people who've clerked for him as an appellate court judge. So we do have a little bit more than just what we saw yesterday.
And I thought him bringing his calendar with was very impressive, and how he was out of town. He said this happened on a weekend, and this is the information that I have. Well, at least he had tried to bring, you know, he defended himself with some facts.
To the temperament thing, since Frank votes Republican, but he's channeling the new argument of the left. When he's on Martha McCallum, he's robotic, which means he's a sociopath. And, he's Patrick Bateman from American Psycho because he shows no emotion. He's room temperature. So he's a sociopath on Martha McCallum. And now when he rightly expresses moral indignation, he's doesn't have the temperament to be a judge. But he had the temperament to be one of the leading appellate court justices in the nation for the last 12 years. I mean, Frank's comments are so mind-boggling to me. And it's exactly why the left wins, despite the shamelessness in which they conduct themselves. Rich Lowry from National Review on Kavanaugh. How is a person who maintains his innocence supposed to react when a political party will credit any allegation against him, when swaths of the media presume his guilt, when every aspect of his teenage years, including notations in his yearbook, are used against him, when all the testimonials in his favor and his decades of spotless public service mean nothing? Frank in St. Charles, how would you react in his position. Give me a fracking break. Dan in Palos, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I just want to say what Kavanaugh been through, I've been through, but not as in detail. I had a company in the state of Illinois here, and I was accused of being part of the CDL scandal. I lost my business after 11 years. My wife and I had hardship. I lost my retirement account just defending myself. They don't care who you are. They don't care what you do. It just protects them and themselves. And I'm sorry, and I support Kavanaugh. This is a tragedy. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Verlon on the south side.
I'm so glad you got rid of that middle-of-the-road Dan Prof. This is the Dan Prof I like to hear. Now, I'm a little disappointed, Dan. I expected him to say something like this. This is a circus.
This is a national disgrace.
Well, he did say
this
that.
Is a high-tech lynching for uppity whites that won't kowtow to the socialist agenda set forth by the Democrats. Now, you know I'm pulling your leg, right?
Yeah, I
his
get it.
His face was awesome. I remember the Clarence Thomas trial, and this was twice as badass. Man, if it was me, I would have been dropping F-bombs all over the place like, I'm done. I just want to tell y'all how I feel. I want to get it off my chest. And the hell with all of y'all. Threw the papers up and just walked out of the place. But that man, he had more poise than anybody that called in to try to say he's supposed to be this way or that way. He had more poise, and he held it together better than anybody I know and that stupid dude from Frank. That stupid dude, Frank, could ever know, okay? Now, I want to see if the Republicans got the backbone like Lindsey Graham when he said what he had to say, and Kavanaugh, he set the pace, and Donald Trump had his back again. That's why I love my president, Donald Trump. He had his back. He gave the press a little bit, you know, yeah, I might pull my referral, but no, he wasn't. He had Kavanaugh's back all the way through it, and that's why I love him.
All right.
So,
Thanks for the call, Verlin.
Yeah.
And, just in terms of Verlin, you should have dropped the F-bomb like what was his friend's name? Squeegee or Squiggy or Lenny or I don't know, somebody from Laverne and Shirley. This a fun exchange between Kavanaugh and Sheldon Whitehouse making light of the absurdity of the questions from Whitehouse.
And there are like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Fs in front of the 4th of July. What does that signify, if anything?
One of our friends, Squee, when he said the F word, starting at a young age, had kind of a wind up to the F word. Kind of a and then the word would come out. And when we were 15, we thought that was funny. And it became an inside joke for the how he would say and I won't repeat it here, for the F word.
Referring to Georgetown versus Louisville and...
Do you want any more on the Fs?
No.
He was so defiant. I loved him. When Dianne Feinstein asked him, what's that third accuser's name? He goes, do you want to talk about that? He goes, no. And he pushes back in his chair like, no, up yours.
You, Senator Whitehouse, that's how Squee would say it.
You know, Squee.
You, Senator Whitehouse, do you get what I'm... Now, do you understand the notation in my high school yearbook, Senator Whitehouse? Vince in St. Charles. Vince.
I was watching them as they were walking in, and I felt so bad for him and his wife. I watched his wife. She looked so bad. And at Durbin, every time he talks, he makes me sick. The Democrats will destroy anybody in their way. It's so sad what they did to this poor guy. He's a great man, and I'm back him all the way.
Thanks, Vince.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, so the politics of this committee hearing, 8:30 this morning, our time, and they're going to vote up Kavanaugh's nomination. Bob Corker, retiring senator from Tennessee, released a statement yesterday announcing he will and is supporting Kavanaugh. Said, I know it took courage for Dr. Ford to appear before the committee today. I also very strongly believe Judge Kavanaugh, like all Americans, deserves the presumption of innocence, and that it was equally as important for him to have the opportunity to address the charges and defend himself. While both individuals provided compelling testimony, nothing that has been presented corroborates the allegation. There's no question Kavanaugh is qualified to serve on the Supreme Court, and in a different political environment, he would be confirmed overwhelmingly. He goes on to add, I believe Judge Kavanaugh has conducted himself as well as anyone could expect throughout this process and plan to vote to confirm him. In addition, on the other side of the aisle, the report is absent any corroboration for Ford's allegations. Joe Manchin will vote to confirm
Kavanaugh. It's funny you mentioned him because last night for 2 hours, Susan Collins, Joe Manchin, Jeff Flake, and Lisa Murkowski met behind closed doors. On the way out, a reporter from CNN just asked them, you know, how do you feel? Are you staying? Are you going to vote for Ford or for Kavanaugh? Susan Collins had no comment. Joe Manchin said there are some concerns that people have. Jeff Flake said she offered good testimony, but so did he. And then Lisa Murkowski said she wants a chance to think about all that's gone on.
Yeah, I know. They're going to go back to,
what's in it for
Murkowski's
them?
Murkowski's going to go back to Anchorage and Collins is going to go to Kenny Bunkport, and they're going to sit in their front room and reflect upon everything that's transpired over the last 48 hours. What a bunch of nonsense. But
they need their votes.
Not
for the committee hearing to get out of committee, but
not if Joe Manchin is going with Kavanaugh.
Then we don't need.
Well, you need, obviously.
One more.
Yeah.
Blake Collins.
Let's do the math, right? It's 51-49. Right. So we'll see. We'll see. But there's clearly a full court press on, and nothing that happened yesterday is inhibiting Republicans, to their credit, after a sort of indirect shaming by Brett Kavanaugh, from moving forward with this nomination. And, you know, the president of the United States tweeting out about 32 seconds after Kavanaugh's hearing concluded that this is why he supports Kavanaugh. The White House reportedly was ecstatic over Kavanaugh's performance yesterday.
Yeah, and according to sources from Fox News Channel, they said that President Trump was not happy after his interview with Martha McCallum, that he wanted to see a fighter out there.
Well,
and he was there fighting.
That's what he got. And we'll get to some of the exchanges with the senators, but I want to go back to a couple of, I thought, important moments in Kavanaugh's opening statement that demonstrated a lot about who he is and who his family is. One of them was, as he talked about at the open, the difficulty they've had in trying to explain this to their daughters, both he and his wife. And a little kicker he had in terms of the kind of daughters he's raising.
I intend no ill will to Dr. Ford and her family. The other night, Ashley and my daughter Liza said their prayers. And little Liza, all of 10 years old, said to Ashley, we should pray for the woman. It's a lot of wisdom from a 10-year-old. We mean no ill will.
Yeah, I was bawling during that because that shows compassion. And then, again, he's a great father.
He also discussed his formative years and his relationship with girls and women as he grew up. And this was important. What was his, since we're talking about high school yearbook committee, for goodness sakes, what were his relationships like with women? I mean, we have some indication with the letters signed by hundreds of women that punctuate his life on this planet, but you want to hear from him, too, to describe it. And he did.
But anyway, we had no social media or text or email, and we talked on the phone. I remember talking almost every night, it seemed, to my friends Amy or Julie. Or Kristen or Karen or Suzanne or Maura or Megan or Nikki. The list goes on. Friends for a lifetime. built on a foundation of talking through school and life starting at age 14. Several of those great women are in the seats right behind me today.
He has more girlfriends than I've ever had in my life. But it was emotional. And he, you know, don't forget, his mother and father and his sister were sitting right behind him. And he really just discussed how she shaped him and how she, you know, made him the man that he is today.
When I was 10, my mom went to law school. And as a lawyer, she worked hard and overcame barriers, including the workplace sexual harassment that so many women faced at the time and still face today. She became a trailblazer, one of Maryland's earliest women prosecutors and trial judges. She and my dad taught me the importance of equality and respect for all people, and she inspired me to be a lawyer and a judge. Last time I was here, I told you that when my mom was a prosecutor and I was in high school, she used to practice her closing arguments at the dining room table on my dad and me. As I told you, her trademark line was, use your common sense. What rings true? What rings false?
Yeah, and so that's what we heard from him at the confirmation hearing prior to all of these allegations. But his what's transpired since the allegations is particularly important. And the additional context he's provided on his life is important. And so the women who rally to his defense.
The committee has a letter from 65 women who knew me in high school. They said that I always treated them with dignity and respect. That letter came together in one night, 35 years after graduation, while a sexual assault allegation was pending against me in a very fraught and public situation where they knew they'd be vilified if they defended me. Think about that. They put themselves on the line for me. Those are some awesome women. And I love all of them.
That was one of the most powerful moments of the entire day for me, because it's about people rallying to you when the chips are down, the true sort of test, one of the true sorts of tests of friendship. And by the way, what of those women? All those professional women, women of accomplishment, that signed that letter, as well as the women that were there backing him up yesterday that he's known since he was talking with them on the phone in high school. What about them? Are their characterizations of Brett Kavanaugh to be believed too? Are they to be given the benefit of the doubt? Do those women matter? Or just the women parroting the left's line, the women Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Alyssa Milano, DiFi's guest for the day. Holly and Hudson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Listening to this testimony yesterday, I was driving, so I didn't have any visual. And I just kept thinking one thing. Everybody knows somebody like her from high school, that those people who were outside looking in, who wanted to be part of the IT group. What an enviable high school experience this guy had. He and his friends, they called themselves a posse. They were with the girls with the Catholic school, the boys with the Catholic school. This was a close-knit group of fun people having a great time. This girl, as it came out, went to the wrong school, other side of town. She was outside looking in. She had a crush on Mark Judge or Brett Kavanaugh. When she said she went to the grocery store with her mother and she went in one door and her mom went in the other, it wasn't to see if Mark Judge felt shame. She had a crush on him. When he didn't return a glance or a smile or an acknowledgement, she had to invent a reason that she was not in part of this group. I have no doubt she has made this up in her mind. For one thing, when you're locked in a bathroom, how can you see somebody pinballing down a stairway?
No, hearing
she has
them.
Invented this in her mind. She was outside looking in. And finally, what I'd like to say to the Democrats, or to all the people who are supporting her as a hero, are we women hear us roar, deserving of a seat at the table, or are we whiny, wimpy women who can't get over a 90-second incident in our life and we've been derailed? She did it. Just she set women back 100 years. And anybody who honors her as strong and courageous, they are doing a disservice to women. My daughters would never have the guts to come home and say this to me because they have been raised to stand up for themselves and not let jealousy of not being part of a group invent and justify complete and utter destruction of somebody just because they didn't acknowledge you or include you in their group.
Yeah, I think that conjecture on your part, Holly, and I normally agree with you, but I don't believe she made this up. I believe something happened to her, but I think she has the wrong crew. I don't think this is out of jealousy. The reason why she brought up that Mark Judge worked at Safeway is because she saw him in Safeway, and she said it was very odd and that he looked at her strange because of him knowing what he allegedly did to her. And she wanted him questioned by the FBI because she wanted a timeline. She said that would help her decide when the attack actually happened.
Brad in West Loop.
Yeah, hi. I agree with you. I think the prosecutor, they could have picked a better one. The idea was great, but in execution it wasn't. There were many things that she should have focused on. When did you get home?
Yeah.
Is there anybody that can corroborate your story? We know she doesn't. Do you keep a diary? We know Kavanaugh did. You know, those are things she could draw a stark contrast from one versus the other, and it was just missed. And lastly, you know, are you going to file charges? These are very serious. Why haven't you yet now that this is public?
That's a great question. I mean, the others are important, too. But the statute of limitations, it was asked, is your understanding that in Montgomery County there's no statute of limitations on crimes such as those alleged? He said, that's my understanding. So if that's her understanding as well, because that's the case, then are you going to file criminal charges? And if not, why not? Absolutely, that question should have been asked. Thanks for the call, Brad. Very good point. I mean, let's play this out.
Yeah,
why wouldn't you, now that you've come forward and put your name on it, why wouldn't you avail yourself of every remedy under the law? Dave on the north side.
Couple things. Hey, guys, couple things. I saw Kavanaugh came into this as a semi-known quantity. He'd been on the scene for a while. He went through the confirmation hearings. He did the interview. All these people have come out saying what you see is what you get. We just got a little glimpse into her for the first time of who she was. And everyone's saying, oh, she's so credible. The audio you played about the travel, even though it was kind of a side issue, I thought was kind of telling because she said, oh, I won't be going to Australia. Kind of like, oh, it's too far. But she has flown to Tahiti. That makes no sense. Tahiti's just as far of a flight. And if you're in the travel like she is, surf travel or whatever, different cultures, places like New Zealand, Australia would be a dream destination. Just that, even though it was not material, just kind of let me a glimpse into her performance as to maybe she wasn't being genuine all the time. And I tried to look at it as, even though I'm partial to the judge, kind of like I was on a jury and unaware of the case, and what you mentioned about her having four witnesses and none of them agreeing with what she said, if I was on a jury, that would be way above anything else that was said the whole day.
Well, and the important,
thing is her girlfriend does not know Brett Kavanaugh, her girlfriend who she was allegedly at the party with.
And the other important thing is that go ahead and file that police report.
Mm-hmm.
Can generate a search warrant based on that if there's any place to search or an arrest. This thing would never get to a jury. This thing would never get to a trial. This thing would never get to arrest. You couldn't get a search warrant on what she has presented. Where would you search? You don't even know. I mean, so to your point about you know what she alleges versus what has been presented as corroborating or information refuting her story, in addition to the questions that remain unanswered, in part because that prosecutor left them unasked.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Playing the role of Joseph Welch at yesterday's Kavanaugh hearing, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who had quite the soliloquy in this Shakespearean farce that we witnessed yesterday.
Lindsey, it was a moment of his lifetime. I mean, who knew Southern Strong would be so effective?
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham, that you knew about it and you held it. You had no intention of protecting Dr. Ford. None. She's as much of a victim as you are. God, I hate to say it, because these have been my friends. But let me tell you, when it comes to this, you're looking for a fair process. You came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend.
Clearly. And Graham,
you messed with the wrong guy.
Graham had a message for his Republican colleagues in the Senate, on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Hey, flake, listen up.
To my Republican colleagues, if you vote no, you're legitimizing the most despicable thing I have seen in my time in politics. You want this seat? I hope you never get it. I hope you're on the Supreme Court. That's exactly where you should be. And I hope that the American people will see through this charade. And I wish you well. And I intend to vote for you. And I hope everybody who's fair-minded will.
I tell you what, the Senate, definitely a sexual chocolate moment. Senate performance yesterday, the performance of these senators. I mean, it's been like this for some time, and including in this hearing. But I mean, was Dennis Miller's long ago description of Congress as a bunch of mediocre intellects, Earl Shibed into looking somewhat consequential? Mm-hmm. Was it ever more appropriate to apply than to the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday? The alternating repetitive statements, Democrats praising Ms. Ford as Susan B. Anthony and Republicans apologizing to Brett Kavanaugh, and just repeat, and the two sides just repeating the same arguments over and over and over again for 9 hours. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Randy Barnett, Georgetown law professor, author of the book Our Republican Constitution, Securing the Liberty and Sovereignty of We the People, Georgetown Law, where Mazie Hirono earned her JD. What an embarrassment.
My condolences.
Yeah, well, that should be seen as an embarrassment to Georgetown Law. I'm not sure it will be. Randy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy.
So your reaction to Kavanaugh's performance, particularly amid the criticism he's receiving from the expected quarters, that his indignation and disgust for what he and his family have been put through displayed a temperament not befitting a Supreme Court justice.
Well, that's rich. He saved his nomination with that performance. his nomination was going down after her performance. And he saved it. But he didn't save it alone. He saved it with the help of Senator Graham. If you want to look at it, one way you could look at it is Senator Graham would never have made that, soliloquy if it hadn't been for Brett Kavanaugh's credible indignation. But on the other hand, the credible indignation was his alone. It was left to him to prove that he was innocent.
Yes.
The Republicans were not helping him do that, and the counsel they retained were not helping him do that. So he was like it was like in volleyball. He's the one that put the ball in the air, and Lindsey Graham's the one that spiked it home.
Nice. Well, and he was not only fighting for a spot on the Supreme Court. He was fighting to keep his current job, correct?
Yeah, well, this is a canard. This is a job interview, and this is not a criminal trial, and therefore none of the rules apply. That's actually pretty ridiculous. He's being charged with criminal conduct. Mm-hmm. We have a system for assessing criminal charges because the charge is so serious. Sometimes the consequence is jail. Sometimes the consequence is not jail. Sometimes the consequence is a fine. Sometimes the consequence is probation, none of that sort of thing. It's the charge that's serious, and we have a system that's developed over centuries in order to weigh charges that serious. Charges that you have breached the normal civility that every citizen owes another citizen. You have breached your fundamental duty to the community. We have a system for that, and that system has rules. And one of those rules is the presumption of innocence. When I was on felony review in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, one of my jobs was to evaluate cases to see whether a charge should be brought. And I learned early on not to trust my gut reaction to the credibility of the witnesses who were talking to me, because they all sounded credible. Many of them sounded credible. And sometimes people who sounded incredible were still telling the truth. So the only way to make that judgment was based on corroborating evidence. There was a moment or two when I did decide based on gut, but that was very rare. Based on corroborating evidence, that's the only way. I try to approach it like a judge, not like somebody who is a juror looking at the credibility of a particular person. Anyway, because of that, I waited for this hearing. I did not tweet about this case. I did no media. This is the first media I've done on this case. Because of the nature of the charge, I now needed to hear I needed to see the things unfold and see what corroboration there was. And not only was the charge uncorroborated in a way you'd require in a criminal proceeding, but it was contradicted by the people she said were the witnesses to it. And his calendar was affirmative corroboration of his story about how he spent his summer and what kind of person he was during that summer. Yes. That wasn't much to go by. But it's all we had. And the charge that he was a criminal was simply not sustained as it needed to be.
And so how did you find the performance and the questions from the lawyers on the panel? Former State Attorneys General Blumenthal and Harris, a prosecutor in White House. Hirano, as I mentioned, J.D. from Georgetown. How did you find the lawyers?
Well, as much as Judge Kavanaugh is being criticized for lack of judicial restraint, he exercised remarkable restraint in the case of Senator Blumenthal, who had the nerve to say to him that a lie in one thing is a lie in everything.
Yeah.
This is the man who lied about his service in Vietnam.
Yeah.
That he didn't. He served in Vietnam and he didn't. I mean, to coming from a guy like that, that was remarkable restraint not to point out the character flaws of each of the people that were professing them to be holier than he was.
But the dark side of me wanted him to do that so bad, to say to Senator Blumenfeld, well, how was your time in Vietnam?
Or Senator Booker, claimed that he had actually fondled and molested somebody when he was younger. He himself claimed that in a story he told about himself. So anyway, look, he didn't do that. He did what he did. He was a human being. He actually acted like a human being. That's really what saved his nomination, was the fact that he was a human being. He was not a robot. He was not somebody who would just, take a punch and not do anything about it. I mean, one of the things that the White House was looking for this time in nominees, and last time as well with Gorsuch, was somebody who not only had the right views, but had the intestinal fortitude to do the right thing in the face of political pressure.
Yeah.
That's what they were looking for. I didn't know for sure if they actually had found that in Brett Kavanaugh. I'm reasonably sure they did now.
I want to go back to something you sort of insinuated in passing, but the performance of Rachel Mitchell, the sex crimes prosecutor from Maricopa County that the Republicans tapped to question Ms. Ford during her testimony. Do you think that turned out to be the right decision? How would you assess the job that she did?
Yeah, I have a very mixed review of this. There's an upside and a downside. Let me take the downside first. It's Alan Dershowitz, my former professor, said correctly last night that prosecutors are not very, and he's not alone in saying prosecutors are not really great at cross-examination because they don't get to cross-examine very often. I was a prosecutor. My single biggest failure as a professional in my entire professional life was the first time I had to cross-examine a defendant in a criminal jury trial. I did not do a good job. In fact, I did the opposite. I did a terrible job. We won the case anyway, which shows how much it mattered. But it wasn't until I got to cross-examine months later that I got to vindicate myself and show I could do it. But that's how long it took to do it again. So she was not a very good cross-examiner, and there were things she could have cross-examined about.
Like what?
So that was bad.
Such as what?
I don't really want to go into it. Well, for example, how long did she know him? What basis did she know him? She claimed to be able to make a positive ID. No details about that. The fact that she left the party, she left her girlfriend behind in a party with rapists, supposedly, and didn't think about her at all. How did she get home? How did she get there? All the rest of it. But I don't want to go into that. Prosecutors are good at building cases. They're not good at tearing cases down, which is what cross-examination requires. On the other hand, she did build a case. She did what prosecutors do. She built a case. She built a case about the Democratic senator's foreknowledge of this information, what the timetable of that foreknowledge was. And that, as you will notice, became the mantra of the senators. What I heard Lindsey Graham in the hallway in between sessions before he made this speech, and he was asked by the press, how do you think she did? He said, she asked the questions I hoped she would ask. And basically, the question she asked was about how the Democrats had concealed these facts from them and from the American people until they decided to spring them out in the last moment. And that was what it took to convince the last Republican senators who were holding out that this was actually a travesty. She actually accomplished maybe what it took to convince the jury of Republican senators that they needed to stand together.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, because that was what was used for much of the questioning of Kavanaugh, the back and forth between Republican and Democrat senators, in terms of you say FBI investigation, I say you had your chance. And it was that back and forth for 4 hours. That's a very good point. All right,
she's the one that nailed down the timetable.
Yeah,
with great detail.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. She does deserve credit for that. I agree with that. That's a good insight. And that's why you're a Georgetown law professor, Randy Barnett, Georgetown law professor, author of the book Our Republican Constitution: Securing the Liberty and Sovereignty of We the People. Randy, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
I hope to talk to you next time under happier circumstances.
Yes, yeah, us too. So. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, let's take a couple calls. Andy and Crystal Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, how's it going? I love your show. My question is this. And it seems to me there were six people at this party, but none of them, it was none of their house. Like, no one owned this house. Their parents didn't own it. I mean, so it seems to me you'd have to believe they broke into this house and did this, or someone lent them the house. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah.
It never was brought up.
The
question wasn't asked. That's why it was so frustrating. Whose house it was, and why don't you leave with your girlfriend?
And it's interesting, too, even like if... her friend
Leland Kaiser,
right, who doesn't know Brett Kavanaugh, so she says, she still believes Christine Ford. Okay, well then, any of the people there, they can't identify the party to which Ford is referring. Well, any party where y'all were
Mark
there,
Mark Judge, P.J. Smith, those guys weren't that nobody.
They all refute it.
Yeah, they said what house party? We were at party. There wasn't a party with just us.
George in Montclair.
Yes, I just wanted to mention the transcription of the Kavanaugh interview with the committee via phone on the 17th of September. The question was asked of him whether Feinstein was actually in the closed session, and and he says she wasn't. To me, this is all part of the collusion on the part of the Democrats. So I think that should be investigated by a special prosecutor.
Well, thanks for the call, George. I don't know if we need more special prosecutors, but that point was made yesterday during the hearings that the opportunity to participate in the decision by Democrats not to, even though DiFi had knowledge, of course, of all of this for months, as did staff and potentially others. And that point was made over and over again by Republicans.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, your favorite exchange with Brett Kavanaugh, a Senate Democrat. There are many to choose from. Blumenthal, Leahy, our very own Sack of Durbin, T-Bone, Booker.
Booker, oh.
And my personal favorite.
I thought it was ladies first.
My personal favorite was Sheldon Whitehouse, but if you want
to. No, ladies first, so you go. No, really.
No. I don't want to be accused of, untoward acts against female kind. So please play your DiFi.
Yes, DiFi, but real quick, 20 seconds of Cory Booker's greatest hits.
There are dark elements that allow unconscionable levels of sexual assault and harassment. You are opening up to open air hurt and pain that goes on across this country. Is you are speaking truth that this country needs to understand.
And then I just was scratching my head. What?
That was him talking to Ford.
Right. That was him talking to Ford.
A lot of people have said courage. I have another word. Are you ready for my other word?
Yeah.
Heroism. You ready for my next thing?
Yeah.
I want to replace Harriet Tubman replacing Andrew Jackson and put you on the $20 bill. Yes!
Yeah! Woo!
That's about where it was going. Cory Booker, the
open air.
The hushed tones. This is so, he's so moved. Everybody's so inspired.
It was so creepy, though.
And by the way, this is not a comment on Miss Ford. It really isn't. Mm-mm. It's a comment on the absurd histrionics and theatrics of Senate Democrats. And there's some Senate Republicans that are absurd from time to time, too, and were yesterday, and were repetitive, just as the Democrats were. But the, brought to tears by your testimony that was on display by all the Senate Democrat men was an embarrassment. And they are without shame, as we talked about with Randy Barnett. I mean, all of these people are living in glass houses while they excoriate Brett Kavanaugh for being some kind of sexual predator.
I'm talking about getting the evidence and having the evidence looked at. And I don't understand, we hear from the witnesses, but the FBI isn't interviewing them and isn't giving us any facts. So all we have...
You're interviewing me.
Say,
you're interviewing me. You're doing it, Senator. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're doing it. That's there's no conclusions reached.
And what you're saying, if I understand it, is that the allegations by Dr. Ford, Ms. Ramirez, and Ms. Svetnick are wrong.
Yeah, that is
obviously
emphatically what I'm saying. Emphatically. The Svetnick thing is a joke. That is a farce.
Would you like to say more about it?
No.
Then he pushed back in his chair.
Diane Feinstein, who's the responsible party for the failure to, have all kinds of time to pursue witnesses for the FBI to go question everybody, put together a nice little report for all the senators to reference. So let me see. After the 45-minute opening statement you made, here's my takeaway. Mm-hmm.
you're denying the allegations against you? Is that, do I have that right? Hey, thanks for paying attention, DiFi. I mean, honestly, the absurdity of this. But that wasn't even close to the most farcical moment or the most farcical senator. Now, again, people can quibble. That's why we'll take your calls and we'll have a little plebiscite on it.
312-642-5600, turnkey debt pro answer.
But for my money, Sheldon Whitehouse, another one of these lefts, the lefts, one of the lefts, officers of the court. Whitehouse is an attorney, along with Blumenthal, former state AG, and Kamala Harris, former state AG, and Mazie Hirono, Georgetown Law. Remarkable. Sheldon Whitehouse doing a forensic interrogation of Brett Kavanaugh's high school yearbook.
High school yearbook? Okay.
Uh-huh. And if you thought Brett Kavanaugh was a little fun and testy with DiFi, yeah.
Did the word Ralph
Unibus?
Did the word Ralph you used in your yearbook?
I already answered the question.
Did it relate to alcohol?
I like beer.
You haven't answered that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next one is...
Senator, what do you like
Judge.
To drink?
I love that. My favorite, one of my favorite moments, I mean, of this smart-ass, like, you, White House. What do you like to drink? I like beer.
No, I want to know what you like to drink.
Yeah, let's get a drink. Hey, it's Miller time, Senator. I'll buy the first round, Senator Whitehouse. What do you want?
Well, speaking of beer, I mean, he did mention beer a lot. He's an advocate for the beer.
I never sexually assaulted anyone. There is a bright line between drinking beer, which I gladly do, and which I fully embrace, and sexually assaulting someone, which is a violent crime. If every American who drinks beer or every American who drank beer in high school is suddenly presumed guilty of sexual assault, we'll be in an ugly new place in this country. I never committed sexual assault.
It sounds like an episode of Cheers with Norm being accused of sexual assault the way he talks about beer. But now back to White House. So they started with you know, Rolfing. What does that mean?
That means what they thought he was Rolfing.
Right.
Yeah.
Sheldon Whitehouse, like,
heard that word
like
in years.
Being interviewed by your great grandfather about teenage nomenclature. Painful.
I don't know if it's boofed or boofed. How do you pronounce that?
That refers to flatulence. We were 16.
Okay. And so when your friend Mark Judge put the same thing in his yearbook page back to you, he had the same meaning. It was flatulence.
I don't know what he did, but that's my recollection. We want to talk about flatulence at age 16 on a yearbook page. I'm game.
Let's talk. I got all the time in the world to talk about flatulence at a yearbook page. I'll make the time, Senator Whitehouse. And it continued.
Devil's Triangle.
That's a sex move.
Drinking game.
How's it played?
Three glasses in a triangle.
And?
Oh, my gosh. This is so embarrassing.
You ever played quarters?
No.
I'd love quarters.
It's a quarters game.
No, tell me about it. Well,
love quarters.
Would you?
Well, you have to ask the follow-up is how many did you ever get in a row? Uh-huh. And did you do it off your nose or through your teeth? Didn't ask that question, did he?
No, because of course, Sheldon Whitehouse is playing dumb, and he pretends that he's just recently heard of alcohol. Sheldon Whitehouse still lives in the first part of the 20th century when there was prohibition. I mean, but not
I want to hear more.
Not
please.
All.
And there are like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Fs in front of the 4th of July. What does that signify, if anything?
One of our friends, Squee.
Squee.
When he said the F word.
I went to prom with Squee.
Starting at a young age. Mm-hmm. Had kind of a wind up to the F word. Kind of a and then the word would come out. And when we were 15, we thought that was funny. And it became an inside joke for the how he would say and I won't repeat it here for the F word.
Referring to Georgetown versus Louisville and
you want any more on the F?
No.
I just love it. Go back. You want any more? Come on. Let's break this down some more. Yeah, I'll give you the Urban Dictionary Georgetown Prep 1982 version, Senator Whitehouse. Any other questions? You, Senator Whitehouse. Now do you see how he used it? Do you see how Squiggy or whoever
Squiggy? Squiggy.
Captain Queeg, who somebody, whoever it was. I love that. That was the best. I mean, what a great moment in United States Senate history, proving yet again it's the world's greatest deliberative body, that is the vanguard of the republic, by putting every high school yearbook committee in this country on notice. Thank you, Senator Whitehouse. Kavanaugh should have been more sarcastic. Scott in Sycamore, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning.
Morning.
You know, the thing that's kind of funny and really sad is, you know, some of the things that were said by this Dr. Ford, you know, one of the biggest ones that stands out to me was her saying that she couldn't remember details, but then said her husband told her it was Brett Kavanaugh. Like, you can't remember details and other people are having to tell you who it is. That's a huge red flag. And going from you didn't tell anybody about it to I told my therapist, then I told my husband, and all of a sudden you told all these people, and your friends that you said you told are all denying it. How is this not being thrown up in the news? Instead, it's just, oh, it was so moving, and all the other BS. Just seems a little ridiculous.
Thanks for the call, Scott. There are some gaps there. I don't know quite how you characterize them, but there are some conflicting characterizations of when she named Brett Kavanaugh. Did it just happen in July, as she said, with the letter to Dianne Feinstein and the interaction with her California congressman? Or did it happen in therapy sessions, as her husband said, that's when it first happened?
First time that happens during the remodeling in 2012. And he said, why do you want a second door? And she said, well, because I was sexually assaulted.
Why are you in therapy over a remodeling project?
Oh, remodeling causes a lot of consternation in marriages. Remodeling projects, if you're unemployed, and job changes. And moving. Those are the key triggers. This is another reason why you're not married.
Exactly. Let's jot those down for a future Why Dan Proft is Single. Tackle that later. Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning. A long hearing, much to say, still processing, still screaming. I think I screamed through most of the night. But when Kavanaugh was asked about the Fs, he could have referenced the Who tune, My Generation, which, you know, why don't you all fade away?
Thanks, Ralph. Holly from Hudson tweeting, Kavanaugh's first homebrew beer should be named Squee.
Oh, because I thought he should start his own brewing company and call it Virgin Ale.
I don't get it.
Because he's a virgin.
Yeah. Well, he's not anymore.
No, he's not.
He's got daughters.
Anymore. Exactly.
I like White House.
That would be a good, you know, summer blend.
Yeah. All right, we'll take suggestions for a Kavanaugh brewery or microbrew as well. Mike in Pleasant Prairie.
Hey, happy Friday, Dan and Amy. You know, it really is a wonderful life when Lindsey Graham as George Bailey and John McCain as Clarence the Angel says, yes, you finally got your conservative almond. I really do feel like that was a transformational day.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. It was, to make a McCarthy era comparison, since there are some similarities. It was a Joseph Welch moment that Lindsey Graham had, I think. Bart in Park Ridge.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It struck me as odd that when, Ford is talking to Durbin and he's asking about the encounter she has with a judge at the grocery store, she says she went in separate entrances with her mom, and she says hi to him. Now, she supposedly was just practically raped by Judge and Kavanaugh 6 weeks earlier. So why didn't she go up to him and say hi to him? It seemed like very odd behavior for somebody that was just practically raped. It had such a traumatic experience on her that, you know, damaged her for forever.
No, what she
says for 4 years after that, she was like, you know, it's in a damaged state. Seems very odd that she just walks up to the potential rapist in a grocery store and says hi to him.
Well, what she said, Bart, is she went through a different door because it was teenage years and you don't want to be seen with your mom. That's what she said. And that she ran into him. He was near. She didn't say he was working the register, but he was in that area, and she just ran into him, and she said that he had a look, like a shocked look on his face when he saw her.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you want to interpret that, but that's why she went in the separate doors and she said she ran into him.
Right.
And he was working at the Safeway.
Bob in Waukegan.
Yeah, I just got to tell you, my wife laughed out loud when she heard you call Dick Durbin Sack of Durbin a couple weeks ago. She doesn't listen to the show, but my Wall Street Journal gets to my house about 5 o'clock in the morning, so I read my Wall Street Journal, and I have you and Amy on the radio right next to me.
Very nice.
So I have some suggestions for you, since you're witty, about names. We should not call Cory Booker Spartacus. We should call him Sparnaticus, because he's nowhere near. Right. We should also call Adam Schiff. It should be Adam, full of Schiff.
Yes.
And Eric Swalwell should be Eric Swallow Crapwell. Right. So there's three more for your repertoire.
Thanks for the call and the contributions there, Bob. Be remiss if we didn't include, as an entrance into best exchange between Kavanaugh and a Senate Democrat, straight out of Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, Dick Blumenthal. This exchange. I mean, this guy.
Okay,
we talked
about
it with Randy Barnett. This guy, you know, starting off with the jury instruction in Latin.
Unibus falsus in omnibus. Are you not? You're aware of that jury instruction?
Yeah, I am.
You know what it means.
You can translate it for me, Senator. You can do it better than I can.
False in one thing, false in everything, meaning in jury instructions that we, some of us as prosecutors, have heard many times, is told a jury that they can disbelieve a witness if they find him to be false in one thing. So the core of why we're here today really is credibility.
How's Vietnam?
Yeah. Let me talk.
The core of why we're here is an allegation for which the four witnesses present have all said it didn't happen.
Let me ask you about Renata Dolphin, who lives in Connecticut. She thought these yearbook statements were, quote, horrible, hurtful, and simply untrue, end quote, because Renata alumni clearly implied some boast of sexual conquest. And that's the reason that you apologized to her, correct?
That's false, speaking about the yearbook. And she said she and I never had any sexual interaction. So your question is false, and I've addressed that in the opening statement. And so your question is based on a false premise and really does great harm to her. I don't know why you're bringing this up, frankly. Doing great harm to her. By even bringing her name up here is really unfortunate.
Yeah, but... What's the Latin phrase, Senator Blumenthal, for D-bag?
El D-bag.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We have a couple more entrants to present in terms of best exchange between Kavanaugh and a Senate Democrat at yesterday's hearing. We've gone through White House. We've gone through
Blumenthal
missing it, Senator missing in action. We've given you a little bit of T-Bone Booker. You got your sack of Durbin. Hey, just turn to Don McGahn. Just turn right now and repeat these words. But I want to get Patrick Leahy in here too. You know, one of the grand elders of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's been an embarrassment longer than Cory Booker's been alive. This was part of their exchange, Kavanaugh and Leahy yesterday.
Now you've talked about your yearbook. In your yearbook, you talked about drinking and sexual exploits, did you not?
Senator, let me take a step back and explain high school.
Yes, yeah, so you
I was
gone
number
in
one in the
years.
Class. Freshman.
And I thought
no,
only
no,
the
no,
Senate.
No, no, no.
I thought only the Senate.
You got this up. I'm gonna talk about my high school. No, I'm gonna
let him answer.
I'm gonna talk about my high school record if you're gonna sit here and mock me.
Yeah, he talked about how he's number one in the class.
Love that.
Freshman class. Played a number of sports.
The record is not what's interesting. What's interesting is him. That was the indication that he was going to take the fight to them more than just in his opening statement. You want to mock me? Then I'm going to talk about it. And you're not going to, you know, bulldoze me. And I, frankly, I don't need Chuck Grassley to run interference either. I'll just talk over you. So that was great. And now your leader, I'm partial to Sheldon Whitehouse in that exchange. You're partial to DeFi.
Right. And this is just what for a highlight for me.
Brett's assault on me.
Oh, gosh, that was not it. Stand by. Here we go.
Crazy stuff. Gangs, illegitimate children, fights on boats in Rhode Island. All nonsense reported breathlessly and often uncritically by the media. This has destroyed my family.
And he just in 30 seconds was able to put, wait, what has happened to him and his life and his wife's life and his family's life just by all these crazy allegations about a docked boat, fight on a docked boat in Newport, Rhode Island.
It was it was repeating in part what he offered in his opening statement, but it was important that he repeated that in Dianne Feinstein's direction. Because she's the proximate cause of this entire Shakespearean farce. Now, there are willing participants in it, but she is the instigator because of how she handled the Christine Ford letter, as was bandied about for hours on end yesterday. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Victor Davis Hanson, National Review columnist, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and author of many books, including his latest one, The Second World Wars, How the First Global Conflict Was Fought and Won. VDH, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So let me ask you this before we get to kind of your take on the day that was yesterday. Do you think everything we saw yesterday, the sum total of it, does that change our politics for the foreseeable future, or will this be forgotten in a week or after November 6th?
No, I think it's sort of the progressive way of doing things. I mean, usually Republicans approve Democratic nominees. It's usually a one-way circus. So I think the idea, again, is the progressive idea that they have such noble aims, in this case, stop Roe v. Wade or mandated equality, whatever the particular slogan is, that any means necessary or justified in pursuing them. And that's pretty much what you saw. So yeah, the U.S. Senate reduced to people, you know, arguing over a slogan in a yearbook.
Yeah,
and that's where we are now.
Well, but my question is, how would this change our politics? Because establishment Republicans, including the likes of Brett Kavanaugh, who apparently haven't understood exactly what they're dealing with, Brett Kavanaugh understands now. The question is, do establishment Republicans understand that now, or are they still going to fall prey to the left siren songs?
I think it was kind of like, if I could use a military metaphor, it was like the Battle of Austerlitz with Napoleon. He lost it at 9 o'clock and he won it at noon. So when I watched Miss Mitchell sort of be outsourced as the interrogator for the Republicans, it was a disaster because she was very polite, sort of no toast to you. She made a few points in irregularities in Ms. Ford's testimony, but there was no point to her interrogatories, and she took the Republicans out of the game, and then everybody said that Ford was empathetic, and she probably was in a way, even though she was contradictory and had no evidence. So by noon, it looked like they'd just given up, and I think they were going to lose not just the Kavanaugh nomination, but the midterms. But then suddenly, about halfway through the session with Kavanaugh, Lindsey Graham just sort of made the best speech of a Republican politician since Reagan in that 1980 New Hampshire primary when he said, "No, I'm paying for this microphone." And he really set everybody alive. And they sort of junked Mitchell, Miss Mitchell. And then they all came out, Orrin Hatch and others, and they did pretty well. And then, of course, Graham was reacting to Kavanaugh, who decided that he wasn't going to play by the Marcus of Queensbury rules anymore, in which the Republicans usually do and lose. So it was just a two different days. There was a morning disaster, then there was an amazing recovery. I think such a recovery that he's probably going to be confirmed.
Well, how do you think Lindsey Graham's defiant tone, though, will play with some of the undecided, such as Collins and Murkowski and Manchin?
Well, he was very smart because he pointed his finger at Republicans and he said any Republican that doesn't vote for Kavanaugh is basically in league with these people. And what he was saying was, I'm a pretty much a moderate Republican, like they are, but I've had it. You know, this is, I think I wrote last night, actually, this is a Joseph N. Welch moment, having no decency, and basically the Democrats were replaying the collective role of McCarthy, Joe McCarthy. So it was pretty powerful. And I think the better question is, if you were a Joe Manchin or Tester in Montana, it's going to be kind of hard now after watching this thing to vote no on Kavanaugh. And I think they're hoping that the Republicans have 51 votes so they're making two or three senators can join in affirming it.
I found it rather entertaining, as did Georgetown Law Professor Randy Barnett, we talked to earlier in the show. The left has gone from Brett Kavanaugh is Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, per his Martha McCallum interview. You know, he's cold and emotionless and robotic. He's a sociopath. To now, because he was defiant and disgusted yesterday, now he doesn't have, despite his 12 years on the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for D.C., does not have the temperament to be a member of the Supreme Court. And your colleague over at National Review, I thought, had a nice paragraph to put to people who are inclined to parrot that line. Rich Lowry writes, how is a person who maintains his innocence supposed to react when a political party will credit any allegation against him, when swaths of the media presume his guilt, when every aspect of his teenage years are used against him, when all the testimonials in his favor and his decades of spotless public service mean nothing? I think that's not only a great defense of Brett Kavanaugh's emotion yesterday, I think it's a great commentary of where our politics find themselves.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's a reminder that for all the staged, scripted process of that committee and all of the machinations of Dianne Feinstein, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, really history sort of made by moments, just a few moments of people who get defiant. And what that whole day ended up as is about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes in which Kavanaugh and Lindsey Graham just said, you know what, this is a sham, I'm not going to put up with it anymore. You're basically trying to destroy a man over his high school yearbook. And you've had no evidence, you have no corroboration, you have no testimony that's valid. I'm not going to do it anymore. And the emotion and the reason and the logic sort of changed the entire atmosphere in just a few seconds. Because before that, it was hard to watch in the morning because you thought, wow, this is nothing but fantasy. And we're all talking about emotions and that she's empathetic and she doesn't remember this, doesn't remember that. We started the morning with no evidence whatsoever to corroborate her testimony. We ended the morning with no evidence to corroborate, and yet everybody's suggesting that she's sunk the Kavanaugh nomination. And just, I think a total of about 3 minutes of pretty powerful testimony and emotion reminded me of Network when Howard Beale, the Peter Finch character, went out and said, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what that moment was. And I admire Lindsey Graham at the end. So the pinnacle of his career, he saved it in many ways. He's redeemed himself as a conservative in a way that Dianne Feinstein, as an octogenarian, really ruined her career. And so there was two different stories, narratives there, but he was redeemed, and I think she really ruined it because she comes off really, really poorly.
Authenticity of Kavanaugh, too, I found compelling, and there were some indicators that was the authentic Kavanaugh because he's not very good at it in some respects, because he's not used to going there. He's used to being the congenial guy who, you know, is optimistic and happy-go-lucky and loves doing all these civic events and hanging out with his friends and so forth. And one of the moments I thought he missed was when Cory Booker was carrying on about Christine Ford telling her truth. She came here to tell her truth, this sort of construct of the left. And it was such an opportunity for Kavanaugh to say, Senator, there is no her truth. There is no
his truth. There's just the truth. And I'm telling the truth. And I guess that's what distinguishes me from you. Some moment like that for some other, some more substantive intellectual pushback against the left.
Well, that's a postmodern trope that there's competing narratives and those with power privilege a particular narrative that otherwise doesn't really deserve to be valid. And that was what he was trying to do. But I do think that they had so demonized him as sort of a white frat boy nerd.
Right.
That he was ineffectual and he was a representation of this sort of wealthy, corrupt prep school culture that nobody thought he would, he was up to the fight, and he might be a John Roberts or something if he was on the court. And I think what they've done is they've made him into a Clarence Thomas that if he does get confirmed, he's going to be more Scalia-like. He's going to be tough. He's going to not, he's not going to forget what they did to him. And in a really ironic way, they've radicalized him. And they did that with Thomas, who ended up as the most conservative member of the court. I think that Kavanaugh is more likely now to be far more conservative and militant almost than he would otherwise.
Do you,
so, and I think you saw that today, that he's not just this old frat boy who nods up and down. He's pretty fiery. He's got a toughness and defiance that I think is kind of reassuring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a different side of him we've never seen, and I liked it. Back to Christine Ford. Do you believe that she was assaulted or that an incident did happen?
I believe that when people are 15 years old, 36 years, that there were drinking at parties and there was roughhousing, and I believe somebody may have misinterpreted a roughhouse too much, and that I don't know what, and I even believe that maybe what you said happened with a bunch of boys. I don't know. I don't think she'll ever be able to prove it. But I believe that things happened in her life that she's not comfortable with. In other words, that her life didn't turn out the way she wants it. And so a lot of people, especially psychotherapists, go back and they say, what incident is responsible for me not being as happy as I should have been? And then they start to exaggerate or magnify it. But I don't think, no, I don't think that Brett Kavanaugh jumped on top of her and tried to rape her. Not at all. I think it was anybody who said that seared into her memory and can't remember how she got there, how she left, if there's four, five, six people, if there's two girls, no girls, and then that can't find 1 ounce of testimony. For me, the two things made it really disingenuous when she said she couldn't fly, and now we find out she not only flies for business, she flies all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
When she wrote that letter and said, and I sought medical treatment for this, everybody was expecting that some receipt from an emergency room or a family physician would turn up. And what she was really trying to say is pass off medical treatment 30 years post facto, going in and talking to a marriage counselor and bringing it up. That's not medical treatment for an assault. I'm sorry, just most people didn't accept that. So there were moments in her testimony that told me that, you know, this person is seriously disturbed and she has an incident that probably of some sort happened, but she so magnified it or situated it that there's no way to know where it happened or what it was. I think that happens a lot to people.
He is Victor Davis Hanson, National Review columnist, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and the author of The Second World Wars, How the First Global Conflict Was Fought and Won. VDH, thanks as always for joining us, providing your insights. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Yeah, some breaking news, some good news. Senator Jeff Flake will vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh. Everyone is reporting that now. Fox News, CNN, as the members are getting seated right now to take their vote to get this out of committee and onto the Senate floor.
Yeah, so Flake's in, so he moves out of committee. It probably means that Murkowski and Collins, or at least one of them, is also in, which means Manchin will be in, which means the other one will be in, which means Joe Donnelly and Heitkamp could fall as well. It really, I think, sort of, I'm sure, is being informed by the polling on this issue state by state, more so than R versus D inside the Beltway, what's in the best interest of each of these individual candidates in these blue state, blue Dems and red states. So now the question is, if he is going to be confirmed,
Is he going to have an asterisk by his name?
Well, no. Does the midterm elections become a referendum now on whether or not to impeach Trump and whether or not to impeach Kavanaugh? Have you just added another impeachment target to the list for contemplation as it pertains to your vote in November? Mike Scott pointing out during the break that Brian Fallon, a former flack of Hillary Clinton, saying if Kavanaugh's confirmed, it won't be for life. Words to that effect.
Oh, really?
Putting the marker down, you know, obviously indicating if Dems get control, then they'll move to impeach. So it informs the, you know, issues at bar in the midterm of the November 6th election. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by our friend, New York Post columnist and Fox News contributor Michael Goodwin. Michael, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
So what about that? Do you think you attack on Kavanaugh to Trump and they're both the referendum, part of a singular referendum question for November 6th?
It's a good point. I don't think Brian Fallon speaks for many people, however, when he makes that an absolute. In the same way, I don't think Maxine Waters speaks for every Democrat when she talks about impeachment as the reason for Democrats to take the House. I think if the Democrats go down the impeachment road and that becomes the key of their platform, then I think they'll be making a big mistake. I think there are a lot of Americans who are, of course, very unhappy with Trump and very unhappy now with Kavanaugh, but I don't think it's really an election platform. It's part of it, maybe, but I just don't think it carries the day. I don't think if they were to take the House, I don't think impeachment would actually happen unless Mueller comes up with something significant. So I think these are great kind of bone-rattling denunciations that get the blood boiling of a select few Democrats. But as you mentioned, if Manchin goes, if Heitkamp, I mean, it's going to be very tough to make a national platform on that sort of thing when clearly not all Democrats are on board. They're going to need something broader, I think, not just this kind of hate-driven revenge for 2016. That's just not going to reach a majority of American voters.
What moved you most about yesterday's hearing?
There's
a lot there. It's a loaded question, but when you watch Ford testify and then when you watch Kavanaugh testify.
Yeah, thank you. It was, I was moved by her first. And, I'm reminded that, you know, like in a trial, you know, you've got to hold your judgment until the end. I thought she was effective. I thought she was appealing. I thought she was a sympathetic person. I think her presentation was magnified by the fact that she wasn't challenged on her core claim that it was Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Only in that last minute did Rachel Mitchell raise the issue that nobody else supported you. The other people you have named as being there, none of them support you, Kavanaugh and three others. And that's the key to it. She may be sincere. She really believes this. But there's no evidence, there's no corroboration from anybody else. And then I think when Kavanaugh testified, if your heart didn't break, you're not human. What he clearly had been through, what his family has been through, it was something very powerful. And I think he has the evidence on his side. They both were powerful. They were both compelling, but he has the evidence. And that's where I hope he is confirmed. As I wrote in my column today, if I had a vote, it would be yes.
Well, the other part of his testimony, both his opening statement and what he sprinkled in throughout the Q&A with senators, the number of women and the quality of women that are supporters of Brett Kavanaugh that rally to his defense in his darkest hour. It obviously moved him. I mean, that all these people would come to his aid when he most needed them, knowing that they would be vilified or they would be questioned or they would be dismissed. It's the women who had the press conference for him last Friday. It's the Georgetown prep women who signed the letter in response to that scumbag Avenatti's antics. It's the women who he's known since high school who were in the audience, obviously in addition to his wife. To me, that was both poignant and powerful and persuasive.
I agree completely. And look, this is a real trial by fire. It was a trial by fire for him, and I believe he's going to come out okay on it. It's also a trial by fire for the Republican Party. I think Lindsey Graham just clarified everything with that speech. That it felt like it was just burning the air, burning away all the junk in the air, and clarifying what was at stake. And I think it will be. I hope it will be something of a trial by fire, and it already has been. But a clarifying moment for our culture. I mean, that there's got to be limits here. It cannot be driven solely by what you want. Every tactic is acceptable. There's no limit. There are no rules. If you want it, that's enough. That to do anything. I mean, that way lies madness, and that way lies violence. And I think we're getting very, very close. So I'm hopeful that this, at least if the Republican Party now stands for something and doesn't let itself get pushed around, I think more people will rally to that. And I think eventually even many Democrats will say, okay, that's enough. That's too far. We have our differences. We believe in some very different things about the role of government, et cetera. But there has to be limits on how we approach this. Let's talk. Let's negotiate.
Well, do
it in good faith.
Yeah, do you think Lindsey Graham, I mean, he said, you know, I supported Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, and what you're doing to him is wrong. You know, we went through that. We played his audio because it was very moving. Do you think he's the one who got to those undecided Republicans, or was it Kavanaugh himself, or a little bit of both?
I think it's a combination. I think that one without the other wouldn't have been complete.
Yep.
And so I think that by his support for Kavanaugh and by his denunciation of the tactics employed, you know, I think all the Republicans, I mean, John Cornyn, Mike Lee, they were all very upset by the way Dianne Feinstein handled this. Lindsey Graham said at one point, I feel ambushed. And I think that was a real break for the Republicans, that these are not good faith tactics. These people whom Graham called, they have been my friends, almost a past tense. They broke something there. And so I think he called it. He blew the whistle on it, just as President Trump had several days earlier in his press conference. I think it had gone too far, and it was pulled back at the last minute. And I'm really grateful for Lindsey Graham and for Kavanaugh for having the strength to do what he did.
He is Michael Goodwin. He's New York Post columnist and Fox News contributor. Michael, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, all right, Senate Judiciary Committee is meeting now. The word is Jeff Flake is a yes vote to vote Kavanaugh's nomination out of committee with a recommendation to the full Senate, and that vote will then take place early next week. And if Flake's on board, then things are looking pretty good for Tank Man.
And the reason why we're playing the song, too, is Michael Goodwin, who we just hit on. He was brought to tears not once but twice during our interview.
Thinking about what happened, and I got to tell you, I was moved by his discussions, Kavanaugh's, of his friends who are girls or women throughout his life. It's actually rather remarkable. I mean, that's not surprising coming from somebody who doesn't have friends. But I was so moved by what he had to say about his friends and how his friends rallied to his defense. I'm thinking about getting some.
Okay.
That's how I'm moved.
Well, you've got fictitious children, so you can buy some fake friends. It's okay, Dan.
It's not exactly, especially online. They're pretty cheap to accumulate. Here's Brett Kavanaugh talking about the women that rallied to his defense, didn't have to,
in his darkest hour amid the most salacious of allegations.
The committee has a letter from 65 women who knew me in high school. They said that I always treated them with dignity and respect. That letter came together in one night, 35 years after graduation, while a sexual assault allegation was pending against me in a very fraught and public situation where they knew they'd be vilified if they defended me. Think about that. They put themselves on the line for me. Those are some awesome women. And I love all of them.
They are. And do think about that.
You're making me cry.
Maybe think about that. I couldn't get one-fifth of that number to admit they went to high school with me, much less rally to my defense in 24 hours in that context. That is remarkable. The thing that punctuates this guy's life is this ever-expanding circle of friends, many of whom are women, who all speak nothing but praise about him in all of his all aspects of his life. Volunteer coaching, as a mentor in the legal community, as a professional colleague. You can't fake that. And you can't fake your way through it to cobble together those kind of the number of people and also the quality of person. He also went on to read some text messages he got from a couple of women he went to college with who were friends of his.
I ask you to judge me by the standard that you would want to.
That's not it. Yeah.
There's so much.
But I swear today.
I don't know. But well, anyway, yeah, there were text messages where he was choked up about what those women had to say to him, that they're in his he's in their prayers to stay tough, to gut it out. You know.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, I just was not expecting after Christine Ford testified. I thought it's over, and I was pleasantly surprised and wrong. And I just that different side of Brett Kavanaugh was amazing. He was a different person than he was on Fox News.
One of those women friends from college, a self-described liberal and feminist, sent me a text last night that said, quote, deep breaths. You're a good man, a good man, a good man. A text yesterday from another of those women friends from college said, quote, Brett, be strong, pulling for you to my core. A third text yesterday from yet another of those women I'm friends with from college said, I'm holding you in the light of God. As I said in my opening statement the last time I was with you, cherish your friends, look out for your friends, lift up your friends, love your friends. I've felt that love more over the last 2 weeks than I ever have in my life. I thank all my friends. I love all my friends.
You're making me cry again. I cried all day yesterday, and even Lindsey Graham was making me cry. Now you're making me cry all over again.
If I hadn't had my tear ducts removed, I'd be crying. Kate in Northfield.
Yes, while watching Ford's testimony, I was reminded of the immortal words of Seinfeld's George Costanza.
Sure.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
All right.
Thanks
for the call, Kate. Didn't think we'd get a Seinfeld reference in. Sherry in Crown Point.
Hi. I just wanted to make a observation about her testimony. About her friend and PJ, not like the situation was unremarkable, and so they wouldn't remember. But in my opinion, if I'm at a party with my girlfriend and we're the only two people there, mm-hmm. she leaves, I would be making a call when I got home at the very least, or the next day, or
right.
at school.
What
hey, what happened? Why did you leave? So she would remember that situation. That's not a situation that you, you know, would just like, oh, she left and you would never ask her.
Right. And you
Thanks,
also wouldn't leave your friend at a house where there were rapists because they would be attacking your friend next.
Sister
and
code.
Sister code. Yeah. Don't forget it, Dan.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.